From Sound and Video Contractor Magazine, this is the SVC Podcast, Show 31, Part 1, with Brian Cox of Audio and Light. Show notes for the podcast can be found on the website of Sound and Video Contractor Magazine at svconline.com. You've got a big brand new church with a huge open space, hard walls, and lots of long reverb time. So how do you make it sound right for speech and live music? Brian Cox is here from Audio and Light in Greensboro, North Carolina, to tell us how he made it happen for St. Pius X Parish, coming up on the SVC Podcast. Brian, it's great to have you with me on the SVC Podcast from Audio and Light in Greensboro, North Carolina. And you did a big audio system in the new sanctuary of St. Pius Church there, and that's always a challenge with the more traditional church designs not being known for being, you know, very acoustically friendly. First, though, tell me a little bit about Audio and Light, and what sort of clientele does the company have, and how long has Audio and Light been around?
We've been around, actually, since 1984, 27 years. The original owner started the business as a live production house, which we still do. We still have a very large live production department. We do walk-in rentals. But our main business has gravitated to systems integration and design over the past 10 years or so.
Well, that's a very competitive field.
It is. And we really try to focus on the house of worship market, higher education, and corporate, and a little bit of government work. We stay, you know, out of K-12 and some of the other things, but those are our main focuses.
And this church, St. Pius X Parish, describe this one for me. They've got a big congregation of over 1,000 now, and this was a brand new and bigger church for them. I guess they'd been holding separate services because of the limited space in their old building, and this new one was a way to get everyone there at the same time?
Exactly. The previous church building was built in the 70s and seated about 350, and they were holding multiple masses every weekend and have somewhere in the neighborhood of 700 to 900 in attendance over the weekends. So they were really busting at the seams as far as their whole ministry there. And so this new facility that they've just completed will seat 1,100, so they can have pretty much the whole congregation in there for mass at one time if need be.
Well, that's probably a lot easier on everybody. And I guess that sort of gets people more into the spirit of things, having a bigger group. So what kind of services do they have? Do they have a lot of live music?
Yes. Oh, yes, they sure do. They have a complete complement of piano, drums, bass, guitars, sometimes strings, and sometimes brass.
And that's probably a special trick because with a reverberant environment, trying to get it to work well for both music and spoken word was probably a bit of a challenge.
Yes, it has. It certainly was. The room is tremendously live with RTs in the 6 to 8 second range. So we had a lot going against us to begin with. But the result's been very satisfactory, actually.
So at what point did they call in Audio and Light? Was it in the development planning right at the beginning, or did you have to kind of come in late in the game?
We were very fortunate that they had the foresight to get us involved right as they finished their architectural drawings early on. That gave us the chance to get all of our raceways, all of the power requirements, all of our structural requirements, everything into the drawing set before they ever broke ground.
And after you saw this and they got with you on the plan, what was the sort of primary technical goal on this thing? Was there anything that particularly stood out?
Well, first and foremost is the intelligibility, speech intelligibility of the room. The architecture is very reflective, very reverberant, very big and open airy room. And their Monsignor is very specific about wanting to be heard and understood. He made that clear to us in the beginning. So that was our number one technical challenge or technical goal, is to make sure that everybody who speaks could be heard. And the second one is flexibility. Once again, they do have music, but that changes. Their band, it may be just a piano in this service. It may be a full-fledged praise band in the next service. So they needed the flexibility to be able to handle all of those inputs and set it up and hear it in different spaces. There's a chapel, there's a narthex, there's other rooms where the audio needs to be heard. And so flexibility was our second challenge or technical goal.
Yeah, the architecture looks pretty interesting because I think you've got a glass separation there between the chapel and the nave.
Exactly. The chapel is set aside for small services or day chapel and also can be used as overflow for the nave for large services. And so the separation is a set of glass doors there that can be opened, once again, for overflow, and then turn the seats the other way. And we, of course, set up the audio in that room to be able to be heard from either direction.
And I would think that with the church people there, once you were called in and you got with them, they probably had some concerns over how it was all going to look as well as how it was going to sound.
Oh, certainly. That was they expressed that in the very beginning, that this aesthetically, this had to be pleasing, most notably to the Monsignor, but to everyone else as well. And so we did, as we talk about the speakers, of course, we talk about the Rinkus Heinz Iconics. Of course, they're pretty low profile, but we also went to the extent of having every speaker custom colored to match the paint on the wall that it's on. That did a tremendous amount to help us with the blending in.
And you did an ease analysis on this, and what did that show you? What advantages did that give you?
The architect did do an acoustic study with a consultant as part of their architectural package. So they gave us that copy of that report, and our ease model kind of verified their findings. You know, I'm sure they did an ease model as well. And so we felt pretty good that we had a good handle on what the room was going to do since it correlated with their results. And of course, then that gave us the ability to start looking at different types of speaker face and direct coverage in the room to see what it was going to take to do it. Because the ceilings are very high, of course, and the room is very wide, and we needed to look at several different options at first. Ease was, of course, a great way to do that right there in our model.
Now, at what point on the design of this did you decide to go with arrays and the particular type on the speakers?
What we wanted to achieve with that is very, very accurate vertical pattern control, because we wanted to keep as much energy off the walls and the ceilings as we could. And secondly, the room is, like I said, very wide. And so we were going to need multiple arrays or something, if we used one main cluster, something very wide. And the steerable column arrays, of course, by nature, have a very wide horizontal pattern and give us tremendous control in the vertical direction. So it was, you know, for speech intelligibility, you know, I think we were pretty much directed down that path.
And any particular reason you decided to go with the Rinkus Heinz IC24Rs on the steered array cabinets?
The 24, for the fact that we used two of those, which gave us the horizontal width of the room we needed without any major overlap and filtering in the middle. And the second reason is they're more of a full-range steerable array than some of the other ones on the market. So since the fact that we had music involved here, we wanted to make sure we could produce as much of those frequencies as possible. And the IC24 gave us that height of array, gave us the sound pressure level that we needed at the back of the room.
And, of course, the look of the system is always kind of a subjective thing. What looks perfect to one person might look a little too obtrusively techy to another. So what kind of speakers did you have on this? What other ones did you have? It seems like you had multiple monitoring locations set up.
Oh, tremendous number of other speakers. For the choir, so that they can hear the priest speak, for speech monitoring of him, we used a couple of Rinkus Heinz TRX-81s. That are kind of tucked off to the side so that they can hear when they're seated in the choir area. There is a small Rinkus Heinz SGX-41 that sits underneath the Monsignor's seat. So when he's seated and someone else is speaking, he can hear up on the sanctuary platform. In the day chapel, we used four SGX-81s from Rinkus Heinz as well. Once again, two in the front of the chapel for day chapel use, and two in the rear for whenever you want to turn and face towards the sanctuary and use the chapel as an overflow. Let's see, we have two SGX-41s in the narthex or lobby entryway of the church, so that when the glass doors are closed, you can hear out there what's being said inside. In several of the sacristies, there are some tannoy ceiling speakers, CVS-6s, I believe. And outside in a gathering space, we have a total of four tannoy DI-8s, weatherproof speakers for outside. And we did do some low-frequency reinforcement with two large bag-end subwoofers that are hidden on top of one of the sacristy rooms there in the nave.
Okay, that's a lot of sources and destinations, and I would think that that would sort of introduce a rather complex control situation. And that's what we're going to get into in part two. Brian, I appreciate your taking time to be here and tell us about the audio system you put into the new St. Pius X Parish. And thanks for being here.
Thank you very much, Bennett.
Thanks for joining us for the SBC podcast with Brian Cox of Audio and Light. Show notes can be found on the website of Sound and Video Contractor Magazine at sbconline.com. Join us for part two as Brian goes into the control aspect of the St. Pius audio system next time on the SBC podcast.